Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Best keep away. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
You might know the phrase dead man's curve from your own hometown or from a horror movie or from the 1963 hit Dead Man's Curve by the group Jan and Dean. However it rings familiar, the meaning is the same. A deadly stretch of road in any town USA, rife for tragedy, heartache, and of course, death. While most storytelling around Dead Man's Curve is the stuff of urban myth, some of the lore is in fact real. That of Hollywood legend, pop music infamy, and strangely enough, in one case, involving one of the most recognizable voice actors in history. Today on Ghost Town, Mel Blanc and the history of Dead Man's Curve. First, let's talk about the song that made this mysterious stretch of road famous. Dead Man's Curve is, like I said, a song by American vocal duo William Jan Barry and Dean Ormsby Torrence. A Los Angeles-based 1960s band, the musicians were pioneers of the 60s California sound and vocal surf music styles that were later popularized by, of course, the Beach Boys. Which makes sense, because the group began working on a song with Brian Wilson at Wilson's mother's house in Santa Monica. In December 1963, Jan and Dean released their collaboration with Brian Wilson, the pop single Dead Man's Curve, chronicling a drag race between two teens in a Corvette Stingray and a Jaguar XKE that began in Hollywood at Sunset and Vine. The chorus reads pretty ominous, if you remember. I'll say a little bit of it to you. Dead Man's Curve is no place to play. Dead Man's Curve, you'd best keep away. Dead Man's Curve, I can hear him say, won't come back from Dead Man's Curve. According to the song, the drivers travel westbound on West Sunset Boulevard, passing North La Brea Avenue, North Crescent Heights Boulevard, and North Doheny Drive. The race ends in tragedy somewhere west of Doheny Drive, complete with sound effects of screeching tires and a car crash. The song itself concludes with the singer relating his last memories of the ill-fated race to a doctor, an event the narrator will not soon forget. It goes, "Well, the last thing I remember, Doc, I started to swerve, and then I saw the Jag slide into the curve. I know I'll never forget that horrible sight. I guess I found out for myself that everyone was right." The song reached number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart, which surprised nobody. Dead Man's Curve's catchy lyrics and powerful teen melodrama was part of the teenage tragedy song phenomenon of that time. These songs lamented, and really romanticized, teenage death scenarios in a dramatic fashion, mostly sung from the viewpoint of the dead person's romantic interest, a friend, a rival, or some kind of witness to the horrific tragedy. Dead Man's Curve became one of the most popular songs in this small subgenre, though admittedly, my favorite is Leader of the Pack by the Shangri-Las, but I digress. Examples of the style of song are also known as a, quote, dead man's curve, and the category was added to the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2008. Of course, the song made the idea of a ubiquitous dead man's curve popular internationally, though specifically in Los Angeles, people theorized where exactly in the city the dead man's curve happened in the song, and if something had actually happened there to inspire the song. Many thought the North Whittier Drive curve, a nearly 90-degree right turn traveling west on Sunset Boulevard just past North Whittier Drive, may have been the, quote, dead man's curve in the song, but we can't know for sure. Others thought, and rightly so, that the stretch of Sunset Boulevard just north of UCLA's Drake Stadium was the area of Dead Man's Curve. For reference, this is about 2 miles west of Whittier and Sunset. And yes, it is an area that is historically extremely dangerous for eastbound traffic. The road ran downhill and bent sharply left, making it easy for a vehicle to accelerate above the posted 35-mile-per-hour speed limit. The curve was not banked sufficiently to keep cars from veering right into a wall of trees, so many drivers overcorrected to the left, causing their cars to spin out or swerve into oncoming traffic. But there are so many other dead man's curves we must mention if we're doing a fair assessment of dead man's curves in and out of Southern California. There's a series of curves on the Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu, California, which have been noted as extremely hazardous. There are sharp sloping turns in Morrison, Colorado, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Towanda, Illinois, the Innerbelt Curve in Cleveland, the Kongshocken Curve in Pennsylvania, and a dangerous curve on South Carolina Highway 9, the site of many fatal crashes. And yet, it's time to circle back to Los Angeles, where the local Dead Man's Curve, or close to people predict it might have been, almost took one of the most beloved voice actors of our time. More after this break. While Dead Man's Curves were all over the country and the 1960s radio waves, in 1961, Los Angeles' own Dead Man's Curve almost claimed its own very famous victim. On the night of January 24, 1961, a 52-year-old man was driving his Aston Martin home through the dark streets of Los Angeles. As he turned east on Sunset Boulevard, his car was violently hit by an oncoming vehicle. While the 18-year-old driver of the second vehicle sustained only minor injuries, the same couldn't be said for the man in the Aston Martin. Unconscious, he was rushed to the UCLA Medical Center, where doctors observed that both of his legs were fractured, multiple ribs were broken, and his pelvis was shattered. Even worse, he had sustained a triple skull fracture. The man was also in a coma and in critical condition. Overall, his chances of survival seemed slim. The man's name was Mel Blanc, the legendary voice actor behind hundreds of beloved cartoon characters, including, of course, Bugs Bunny. Born Melvin Jerome Blanc on May 30, 1908, in San Francisco, Mel Blanc was a working talent from a very young age. After graduating high school in 1927, he divided his time between leading an orchestra, becoming the youngest conductor in the country at age 19, and performing in vaudeville shows around Washington, Oregon, and Northern California. Even as a teenager, he was interested in voice work, moving upward in the radio world until Blanc was a regular on the NBC show The Jack Benny Program in various roles. Radio Daily magazine wrote in 1942 that Blanc, quote, specialized in over 57 voices, dialects, and intricate sound effects, and by 1946, he was appearing on over 15 programs in various supporting roles. In December 1936, Mel Blanc joined the production company responsible for theatrical cartoon shorts for Warner Brothers. There, he would perfect the voices of Porky Pig, Woody Woodpecker, Tweety Bird, Yosemite Sam, Speedy Gonzales, and of course, Bugs Bunny. After his contract was up at Warner Brothers in 1960, he continued to work for them, but also for Hanna-Barbera. His roles during this time included Barney Rubble of the Flintstones and Cosmo Spacely of the Jetsons. At this point, Blanc was known as the, quote, man of a thousand voices, a very successful, very busy voice actor at the height of his career. A horrific, debilitating car crash was something nobody, including Blanc, saw coming. For 2 weeks, Blanc was in a coma and completely non-responsive. Doctors tried to wake the man up without success. Things were getting desperate for Blanc's friends and family. Eventually, one of Blanc's neurologists at the UCLA Medical Center had an idea. He asked Blanc, how are you feeling today, Bugs Bunny? After a slight pause, Blanc answered in a weak voice, just fine, Doc. How are you? The doctor then asked if Tweety Bird was there. Blanc responded, I taw a putty tat. It was a shocking reply. The doctors and Blanc's family were stunned. Somehow the voices that had become Blanc's life might actually have saved his life and his cognition. Finally, there was hope that Blanc could recover. And he did. Years later, Blanc's son, Noel, revealed that he performed some of his father's Warner Brothers characters for some cartoons during his recovery. Some other substitutes also filled in, but of course, there were no Mel Blanc. Because the Flintstones' production schedule was so rigorous at the time, the show's producers set up recording equipment in Blanc's hospital room to allow him to work from there, voicing Barney Rubble from the comfort of his full body cast. Most of these recordings were made while he was laying flat on his back in a hospital in a full body cast with the other Flintstones co-stars coming to the hospital and gathering around him to record. Blanc returned home on March 17th, but he was in, again, a full body cast for nearly 7 more months. But besides continuing to work at his many voice acting jobs, Blanc's first order of business was to see to it that the deadly Dead Man's Curve on Sunset Boulevard was made safe for drivers. On March 21st, 1960, Blanc filed a $500,000 lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles for his injury, one of 26 accidents in the preceding 2 years at that Sunset intersection. Though I couldn't find out what actually happened in the lawsuit, it did result in the city's funding of restructuring of curves at that location and probably saved a lot of lives in the process. Blanc made a highly publicized return to the public eye when he appeared on the Jack Benny program to film its 1961 Christmas show, moving around the stage by crutches and a wheelchair. To circle back to the song itself, Jan Barry of Jan and Dean would himself later be involved in a near-fatal car accident in 1966 when he crashed his own Stingray into a parked truck on North Whittier Drive near, but not on, the area of Mel Blanc's Dead Man's Curve. Despite the number of injuries he received, Mel Blanc would go on to live and work for another 30 years in entertainment. Throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s, he continued to voice his beloved Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera characters for TV, compilation movies, and even feature films like 1988's Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Oddly enough, the injuries sustained in his dance on Dead Man's Curve would not be what caused the iconic actor's demise. Blanc began smoking a pack of cigarettes per day at age 9 and continued up through 1985, and he would die in 1989 at the age of 81 due to complications from emphysema and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. As we've learned today, for Mel Blanc and so many others, Dead Man's Curve has a very specific meaning and memory, be it a physical space, a catchy song, or a life-changing intersection of Sunset Boulevard.